Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You see, football is a meritocracy. You aren't handed anything. You earn everything, every single day, over and over again. You have to prove it. That's the way that the NFL, that's the way that football works. A great example of this is Dak Prescott and what he's done. He's earned the right to be our quarterback.
I'll tell you, I don't know if there is any play that Tony Romo ever made in a game that did as much to help his team win and look ahead and move forward as what he just did right there. Welcome to the Damon Brew Show. It's great to be back with you. Had a nice little time as I stepped away over the weekend to get hitched. Yeah, it's week 11. We don't have time for big emotions and love and all that nonsense. It's ready to talk a little football. We got the right guy to do that with. He is the host of ESPN's NFL Live. He normally joins us on a Wednesday, but since we got Warriors basketball coming up this time tomorrow, Trey Wingo joins us here and now on 95.7 The Game. Trey, I wanted to bring you in with a little Tony Romo because that is leadership. Leadership doesn't always happen from the front. Sometimes it happens from behind. That is a good cowboy.
Yeah, there's no question. The thing that I tweeted out there was real leaders lead when it's not about them. And that was Tony Romo exhibiting leadership. You know, he's the one that really could be the one thing that could mess up this little ride that they're on because, you know, he's a star. And people like to criticize Tony Romo a lot based on mythology and not factual information. But by any definition, he's a star in this league. He leads the Dallas Cowboys, one of the most storied franchises in NFL history, in passing yards and passing touchdowns. He's only 73 completions away from taking the most completions in Cowboy history away from Troy Aikman. And, you know, he's the guy they're paying $20-plus million a year. And for him to say, there's something magical going on here. There's something bigger than my skill set versus Dak's skill set that's working. And to be the competitor that he is and to say it's better for this to continue the way it is than me to jump in and be a part of it, that to me is the essence of football and why I think it's the ultimate team game. It's not about you. It's about what you can do to help the team win. And what he did today assured this team that whether or not they complete the task that they think they can do, which is get to the Super Bowl and potentially win it, he will not be the reason they won't do that.
And if you're looking for a sports truth that echoes throughout time, you don't mess with a streak, baby. You just don't mess with a streak.
As they said in Bull Durham, if you think you're winning because you're wearing women's underwear, you keep wearing women's underwear.
Rose goes in the front, big boy. Trey Wingo from ESPN here on 95.7 The Game. The AFC West. Are we looking at the best division in football? 25 combined wins, and the Chargers are the best last-place team you're going to find, right?
They are and they aren't. I mean, I kind of feel bad because, yeah, you could say San Diego probably should have won every one of the six games they lost. But you know what? They lost six games. So, I mean, they found new and creative ways to lose them. I mean, the fumbles against the Saints, the four fourth-quarter interceptions just this past Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. So as top heavy clearly as the AFC West is, when you have four teams in one division and they're all above 500, I'm going to lean that way by the slightest, but I can understand the rationale for the AFC West. But the Chargers, to me, their bottom is lower. The ceiling is higher, but their floor is lower than the NFC East.
We've got some new stories to look at this week, and I think one of the first needs to be, guess who's not competing with the single most polarizing election of our entire lives? Look who's no longer competing with the Chicago Cubs trying to win a World Series. And yeah, Everyone leans forward and walks away from this NFL weekend going, what great games those were, and everything with the league is fantastic, and that was exciting. We had two really good games in Dallas and Seattle, and oh, this was all good. The NFL's back, baby, and it didn't take very long, if you don't mind me saying.
No, I think that's true. And I think it speaks, it's almost like, and I tweeted this on Sunday, it's almost like the NFL said, okay, boys, the election's over. Let's go put on a show. It certainly did from top to bottom, where the crazy play by Jameis Winston, the blowout against the Bears, or the unbelievable play by the Denver Broncos special teams to do something that had never happened before, win a game with the two-point conversion.
He was out of bounds, Wingo. Yeah. He was out of bounds.
Well, here's what we can say definitively there. He might have been, but there was nothing to show that he was or wasn't. That's why whatever the call was on the field was going to stick no matter what.
I thought that the green in between his shoe and the sideline meant he's out of bounds.
But you can't see definitively right down the sidelines either from behind him or in front of him. All we have are angle shots. And when you have a shoe that is white and you have a sideline that is white, how can you definitively say which part is the shoe and which part is the sideline?
It was a
confluence of a bad camera angles, the right color choice in shoes, and the call on the field.
It was really something else, and it's just amazing that as the Raiders are sitting there on a bye week, watching them coming so close to picking up both a game or a half game, and it was on Denver and on Kansas City, they had two of the most ridiculous comebacks you'll see all year.
They really will, and that was a must-win for Denver because their schedule is not going to get any better, and after the bye, they've got a huge home game, which has been flexed to Sunday night against Kansas City. But the Chiefs are, like, watching the Chiefs play is like realizing you're going to die by 1,000 paper cuts because they're not a dynamic team. They're not a team that's going to make big splash plays down the field, but they're going to get their 5 or 6 yards on every series, and you're going to have to stop them. The best way to describe the Chiefs is this one stat. They have 2 17-point comeback wins in the NFL this year. The other 31 teams have a combined 2 17-point comeback wins. So there's something special about them in the regular season. Going back to last year when they won 10 straight, they have now won 17 of their last 19 regular season games. So they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot. And you've heard me say this a million times. Most games are not won, they are lost. The Chiefs are guaranteed not to beat themselves. You're going to have to beat them.
Speaking of kooky, two similar, oddly won victories, the Los Angeles Rams have won 2 games this year without scoring a touchdown. But it's this whole without scoring a touchdown thing that they finally decide to focus on. Do you think Jeff Fisher made this decision independently of any front office pressure to go with Goff this week? Because there was nothing about him before today that said Goff is going to be seen anytime soon.
Well, not only that, but there was nothing after the game. You know, the only thing I can think of is it's a long flight from New York to L.A., and they had a lot of time to think about things. But, you know, to that point about the 2 games without an offensive touchdown, that hadn't happened since 2002 when the Bucs did it. Now, if you're the Rams, you're thinking, hey, Bucs won the Super Bowl that year. Woohoo! This is going to be great. No, that's not going to happen. But it just shows you how rare the idea of winning not one but 2 games without not an offensive touchdown, a touchdown, defense, special teams, whatever. They've won 2 of those games. So it's interesting, and the optics are terrible for Jared Goff here for a couple of reasons. He's going to become the 8th rookie quarterback to play this year. He's going to be the 3rd Pac-12 rookie quarterback to see action this year behind Cody Kessler and Kevin Hogan. Caveat, they were both in the Browns, so we understand they've been going through a lot of quarterbacks. But, you know, there were only 15 quarterbacks drafted. 7 of them have already been played. He will be number 8. So really, the number 1 overall pick is going to be the middle of the pack quarterback to play this year. And some of the things that Jeff Fisher and the Rams have said about his progress haven't really helped him either. Well, he's coming along, he's progressing. Then you see what Dak has done as a 4th-round pick. You see what Carson Wentz, the pick right after him, has been able to do in Philadelphia. It's just not a good look. And I really hope for Jared Goff's sake that he's getting it now. Because if he comes out and struggles after all this time and seeing what so many of the other quarterbacks have been able to do right away, you know, the Rams gave up a ton, not just a few, a ton of picks to go up and get this guy. He's got to be that good for those picks to be validated.
Speaking of Jared Goff, we're going to be talking with his former college coach, Sonny Dykes, at 6 o'clock ahead of the big game, so that should be something to stick around for. We'll certainly ask him about Jared right there. Right now we're talking with Trey Wingo, host of ESPN's NFL Live, and here's another quirky quarterbacking situation, and it's the Niners with Colin Kaepernick, who is starting to look a little bit more comfortable in Kelly's system. They lose over the weekend, but it might have been their best all-around game offensively of the season as they tried to come close to beating the Cardinals down in Arizona. But it feels like the steps backwards to whatever progress we might see between now and the end of the year are built in by the restructured contract. It so feels like Kaepernick was going to be out of here on the next thing smoking. What good is it if they actually start clicking over the next handful of weeks, if nothing more to blow a draft pick?
Well, that's an excellent question. Look, you, as Herm always says, you play to win the games. You know, I mean, that's the deal you sign up with in sports, is that, you know, it's not a try-hard business, it's a do-good business. And they have to go out there and win games, because that's why you keep score. You know, nobody's going to say, hey, good job, guys, you played really hard. No, they want to see results, and this is a results-oriented business. And the bigger issue is, I'm not so sure it's so great for Colin Kaepernick to be clicking in Chip Kelly's system, because, look, Chip Kelly has said he's not interested in Oregon, but the other side of this is, how much interest are the 49ers going to have in Chip Kelly? And I hate to keep going back to this point. I'm not trying to, you know, run the guy out of town, but just take a look at DeMarco Murray. In 2014, he took Emmitt Smith's name out of the record books for the Dallas Cowboys for the most rushing yards in a single season in Cowboys franchise history. Then he goes to Chip Kelly, who completely mismanages him and tries to make him move left and right instead of north and south in that offense, that fast-tempo offense, and had a disastrous year, couldn't get on the field. And then he goes to Tennessee, where they say, oh, wow, you're a north-south runner, so let's go that way, and he's having a resurgent year again. What makes it bad for Chip is not only that the fact that the team hasn't won since week one, but then you have a player that he brought in and paid a boatload of money to incorporate into a system that not many people thought was right for him, and he had a great year before, and he's having a really, really good year after. These are all ominous signs if you're being honest about it and just looking at what's a realistic situation and how this might play out.
Any ominous sign for the Patriots that Gronk might be out Sunday against the Niners, or do you think Brady, Belichick come in here and undress the worst defense in football?
I think it's really a bad spot to be playing the Niners. I mean, playing the Patriots after a loss, especially that game when they were on the 1 yard line with a chance to win it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the Gronk issue obviously is huge. He's a nightmare matchup. There is literally no one you can say, oh, we'll put this guy on him and we'll contain him. It just doesn't happen.
Draymond Green? I would go with Draymond Green.
Yeah, that might be your best bet. I think Cam Chancellor tried a little Draymond Green on him in the end zone. Although I do think that was a great no call. There was contact on both sides. And if you want to throw a flag, you could say just as much Gronk pushed off as Cam Chancellor held. So I thought that was a great no call. The bigger issue is Tom Brady looked human on Sunday night. And Tom Brady doesn't enjoy looking human. He threw a horrible interception where he hoisted it up there. He almost cost him the game when he fumbled on that goal line dive-in at the end zone and was moving before the ball was firmly in his hands. I think a properly motivated and angry Tom Brady coming back to his home area is not what you want to see when you're riding an 8-game losing streak.
Raiders, Texans, Mexico City. For the Raiders, in a comeback to credibility season, it's kind of a shame that this can't happen at the Coliseum on Monday night. Monday night used to belong to the Oakland Raiders, but this game belongs to Mexico City. And in terms of international games being played, it feels like it's got more consequence riding on it than most of the international games we see be played. Maybe that's because we're just so closely monitoring the Raiders' ascension to see if they can really go from playoff contender to Super Bowl conversation. Hey, a big win over this Texans team on the road once again, even though it's a home game, would be very impressive. This is a big game for Del Rio.
It certainly would, and we'll be there. NFL Live will be there with all our studio shows getting ready for that game, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, you're going?
You know, yeah, we'll be there. Yeah, we'll be on the road.
Oh, so that's great.
The only downside is, which is actually a good side, as you said, it's a home game for them, but it's not a home game. And as we all know, this is probably better for Oakland. Yes, they won their last home game against the Broncos, but you and I have chronicled their struggles in Oakland going back to 2015. So if they just say to themselves, we're not the home team, we're just playing a game away from Oakland, their odds of winning increase dramatically. And you know, it's funny, we did a segment today and the producers were like, hey, how do you think Derek Carr is going to handle that Houston defense? And I said, I really think it's the other way around. Is how does a Houston defense without their best player, J.J. Watt, and their best cover corner, Kevin Johnson, handle a really hot Derek Carr who's playing at an MVP-type level? And this is another challenge for the Raiders defense to prove that, hey, what we did against the Broncos, we can do again. Because Brock Osweiler, to put it mildly, has played terrible. Over their last four games, the Texans running backs are averaging more yards per carry than Osweiler is throwing in yards per attempt. Now, that is almost impossible. It is almost impossible for that to be the case. But that's how much he's struggling to push the ball down the field. Two, by the way, a pretty good receiving core with Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins. So this is a real chance for the Raiders defense to say, hey, that wasn't a fluke. It wasn't an anomaly in the Sunday night game against the Denver Broncos. We're going to be better, and this is a defense, an offense, rather, that we should shut down as a defense, and we're going to do it. And how about the fact that we got back-to-back Raiders games in primetime?
Yeah.
This is really what we're talking about here. This is what makes it so much fun, and this is the recognition that people are saying, all right, this team is really going to be something.
It's fun to see. It really is. It's fun to watch, and it's nice to know everyone is now paying attention to the Oakland Raiders again. Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much, Trey, for joining us a day early and going out of your way to do that. It means a lot to us with the Warriors coming up tomorrow. And let me just suggest, on your way to Mexico City, Trey Swango for a week?
Sure, why not? Or we'll just call this a Trey Tuesday. Either one of those will work.
There you go. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Damon. Be good.
One and only Trey Wango here from ESPN, Little NFL Live. Always good to talk to him. You know, Bill O'Brien, head coach and absolute star of the Texans Hard Knocks. If you like a guy who can work in an F word into a conversation about babysitters, like, that's Bill O'Brien. He was awesome in Hard Knocks. Anyways, here's what Bill O'Brien had to say about getting ready for the Raiders in Mexico City.
I think they're playing as one of the best teams in the league. I think that they're very athletic. I think offensively, just watching a lot of their film here over the last couple of days, big, big offensive line, downhill running attack. Derek Carr's playing very, very hard, very well. He's playing good situational football. He can run. He's got a quick release. He's accurate. They've got some go-to guys in the passing game with Amari Cooper and Crabtree, Roberts, Holmes, the tight end. Like I said, Murray, the back downhill guy. So it's a tough challenge for our defense.
It is a tough challenge for any defense, I think, to keep up with the Raiders, who I think are seventh in the NFL right now, total defense, seventh in total offensive yards right now. And obviously, as a passing attack, as a ground game, they've got balance. I mean, the Raiders are an offensive handful. The question is, how far they go depends on their defense this year. If the defense continues to get healthier, Mario Edwards Jr., Aldon Smith returns from suspension, it could look even more different a couple weeks from now than it does right now. And there's still more time to get better. And guess what? They've got another subpar, or as Trey Wango just so eloquently said, how do I say this? Awful. That's Brock Osweiler. He is yet another line of quarterbacks that the Raiders are sharpening their fangs against here. So, I mean, just look back at it. The best quarterback that the Oakland Raiders have seen since week six is Alex Smith in week six. They opened with Drew Brees and Matt Ryan. Then they played Marcus Mariota. Then they played Joe Flacco. Then Phillip Rivers, who we know is good, not great. By the way, the San Diego Chargers might have officially died at home over the weekend. Gianna, we'll get to that in a little bit of a second. There were more Dolphins games. There were more Dolphins fans at that Chargers game.
It was 15,000 under than what they were
under capacity.
Have.
Yeah. So that means 20.
Right.
That means there were 20,000 empty seats, and it felt like everyone who was in a seat was wearing that aqua dolphin green, blue, gray. I have a little color blindness messes
uniform,
with me.
Yeah. Look,
yeah. So. Blake Bortles, Jameis Winston, Trevor Siemian, and next up for the Raiders defense, Brock Osweiler. You know, while you're trying to figure out how much better you can be defensively, it's nice to get a few games like that strung together to give you a little swagger, a little swag factor. It's always an important thing. 888-957-9570. We're about to take a couple calls, but I want one more time to show you kind of what a copycat league the NFL is, on field and off field. Do you remember the zone blitz? You'd never heard of it, and all of a sudden, every single team in the NFL was running a zone blitz. Do you remember the wildcat? No one did it until one team did it, and then everyone did it, and then no one does it anymore. That's how the NFL works. It is a copycat league. Oh, all of a sudden, everybody's playing up-tempo, more up-tempo. Everyone's playing more up-tempo, too. It's a copycat league. It's a copycat league from player standpoints, from player behavior standpoints, from coaching and GM tendencies. It is a copycat league. What works for one team is something another team tries to copy. And that brings me to Mike Evans. Because you know what the copycat of the NFL is now? And now we'll go down to whoever our sideline reporter is to find out why Player X is not standing for the national anthem today. Mike Evans, what is it? I don't like the outcome of the election. Okay. Did you vote, Mike? No, I didn't. In case you missed it, Mike Evans took a seat to protest the democratically elected next president of the United States, which he did not bother participating in, probably because no one would have tweeted about him going into a voting booth. But boy, you sit during a national anthem, they'll be talking about you on a radio show at about 4:21 in the afternoon on a Tuesday in San Francisco. By the way, when my wedding ceremony was officially over, JT the Brick looked at his watch. Or looked at his phone. You know, people look like when something people check their phone
right,
700 times a day these days. He's like, I wasn't, you know, making a call or anything, but I happened to look at my phone the minute you were like walking down the aisle. I got married right at 4:20.
Did you really?
How about that?
How fitting.
So
Evans is apologizing. I guess he's changed his mind.
Because
do something else.
Well, you know, apparently Mike Evans wasn't paying attention to the, 6, 7, 8 week long backlash that Colin Kaepernick got and was surprised that people were a little upset by this. And it's not even upset by this anymore. Like right now, like you can't even offend me with making a national anthem protest. I assume that you're planking or you're doing the mannequin challenge like that. Your anthem, your national anthem protest is nothing more than a mannequin challenge now. Like there's no symbolism left in it.
It feels like a fad.
It's a fad that's over. This might as well be leggings. Okay? This might as well be jellies.
Oh, jeggings. Don't go there.
This might as well be it's the bell bottom of protesting. Like everyone's over it. Now, Mike Evans issued a very nice apology. I'll give him credit for that, and I'll even read it to you. I want to start by apologizing to all the U.S. military members, their families, and fans who I offended with my actions on Sunday. It was never my intention, as I have tremendous respect for the men and women who serve our country. I have very strong emotions regarding some of the many issues that exist in our society today. I choose to sit as an expression of my frustration towards this year's election, and so on and so on and so on. And I'm not going to read any more to you because he doesn't get any more read to you because the bottom line is he didn't vote. And this is the problem with guys who are 20-somethings who are having a woke Twitter awakening. I have very strong emotions. Oh, you have emotions, do you? Oh, my goodness, you have strong emotions. It's too bad that none of those emotions got your ass to the voting booth.
Which is the problem.
But I'm sure he tweets great in emojis. Do you realize that there were a generation of men who came back from winning World War II who didn't even have emotions about that? What'd you do this summer? I beat Hitler. You want to talk about it? No. And that was that. The softening of the young men of this country who feel that their emotions mean more to the grand scheme of things than action is hysterical and depressing and completely just as misplaced action as you can have. Action is what changes the world, not your emotions. Everybody's so sensitive. Look, here's the deal. When you put yourself out as not just someone who's involved, but as a leader of something, and then it is quickly revealed that you are completely unqualified to lead, President of the United States. This is what happens. This is what happens. I know Colin Kaepernick didn't see any difference between the two presidential candidates because his worldview, which expands now far beyond his own Nike closet, His worldview told him that there was no difference between the two candidates. And it's very obvious in that statement alone that you did zero research to find the differences between the two candidates. And you're using something that happened on Twitter to form your opinion for you. Let me tell you how adults in the real world function. They gather information, they apply it to actual action, and that's how change comes. I know a lot of people want to bend over backwards to talk about the T-shirts he bought those kids in Oakland and the meeting that he had with them. And I'm sure it was empowering and enlightening and it related to them more than anything I could do. But if after Colin Kaepernick's meeting, talking about all these kids and what they're entitled to and what their rights are, after that Colin Kaepernick meeting in the very next building, I had the same kids come over and I registered them to vote, I will have done more for them than Colin ever would. You understand? No, you don't understand, I guess, is my point. The amount of people who don't understand that talking and tweeting, by drawing awareness to something, means you did nothing for that thought thing. Thank you for the awareness. I was completely aware of police brutality and racism before all of this. Stop making excuses. If you cannot determine the difference between completely committed and kind of fraudulent, that's up to you. And oh, by the way, we just had an election that proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that making that distinction is a very hard thing for people to do these days. Staggeringly uneducated and stupid must you be to think that there is any justification in not voting. I'm sorry. There's nothing to debate. We're taking no calls on that. Oh, I think it's fine to not vote because, meanwhile, I believe Donald Trump has named another person with a slightly white supremacist background to his cabinet. But as far as Colin was concerned, there were no differences between the two candidates. If you'd like, we'll come back with the actual Merriam-Webster definition of hypocrite, in case you think I'm wrong, next on 95.7 The Game. Welcome, welcome. It is great to have you here. And we're not going to go down this path and spend the entire show there, I can promise you that. But I do want to share this with you, as someone asked the question, that, you know, Colin is disheartened. He looks around and sees a system rigged against him. And I can understand not wanting to participate in that system. Okay, first of all, thanks for being an easy target for the white supremacists who want to rob you of your vote. You're an easy target if that's the way you go through life. Let me tell you, the only unrigged thing in the entire electoral process is your vote. No one can rig your vote unless, of course, you are dumb enough to have been conned by the right that it doesn't count because the system's so rigged against you. Remember, the seed of apathy is what they've been planting, and it grew right underneath Colin. And then he wants to explain that his app. Let me just tell you, this is right out of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the simple definition of hypocrite. A person who claims to pretend or have certain beliefs about what is right, who behaves in a way that disagrees with those beliefs. A person who puts on a false appearance of virtue or religion. A person who acts in contradiction to his stated beliefs or feelings. As of right now, along with making the cover of Time magazine, which might have prolonged his career because the Niners might have cut him without that, to be totally honest, along with making the cover of Time magazine and doing a seminar for some kids in Oakland where they all got T-shirts, Basically Colin Kaepernick, after Niner games, lectures Tim Kawakami and Ann Killian and Lowell Cohn on race relations. That's it. That's what he's done. He lectures the Bay Area media on something in which he is not an authority. He's had all the time in the world to shop in person or online for his cops or pig socks. He had all the time in the world to shop in person or online for his Malcolm X T-shirt and his Black Panther T-shirt. He's got the full protester starter kit, but he's never had time to register to vote, much less go and vote. And this guy has taken every chance he's got to speak down to everyone with a self-ordained authority of activism while he's not even registered to vote. you know. So, Mr. Black People Can't Catch a Break. And he's got a lot of good points about that. Didn't even bother voting for the first black president in the history of the United States. Not once, but twice. He never registered to vote in any election, according to the Sacramento Bee. Forget about facing backlash for not voting. He never even registered to vote. He turned 18 in 2005. He's unregistered in the state of Nevada when he was at Reno, and he is unregistered in the state of California. He sat out the 2008 and the 2012 dance. If you're a young black man who wasn't motivated to vote for Barack Obama in 2008, you can sit down and shut up the rest of my political life. My God. Kaepernick told a reporter he didn't vote in the most recent election because he felt it would be hypocritical of him, which suggests he has voted in the past but cannot bring himself to vote now.
But then that he's not true because he didn't vote at all, right?
He's not even registered. He's not allowed to vote.
It's a real shame. He had an opportunity. You know, he kind of brought this whole issue up. Everyone's been talking about it. He was in the limelight, a lot of media attention. He really had an opportunity to run with it, to talk about it, but then to be about it. If you don't do anything, nothing is ever going to happen.
Right.
And then to just forget that it's our responsibility. It's not just our right. It's our responsibility to vote. And he completely didn't do that in this election or the last couple of elections. It's sad. It's disappointing because maybe had he done it a little differently, we might see some change.
Hey, and it's great, Gianna, that he sat down with a few kids in Oakland a couple of weeks ago, and it's super duper that he spent at least $300 getting everybody t-shirts. It's great that he gave them their attention. It's nice to give your attention and your
Absolutely.
Personal time at any function, when you give back to a community, when you talk to children. I'm not here to besmirch that in any way, but I'm going to tell you right now that all that awareness still leaves you $2.25 short of a bus ride. All that awareness, and you are still $2.25 short of getting on Muni. So, awareness is super duper. And awareness is supposed to lead you to activate some change. And then this guy's not even registered to vote, and people turn to him as if he's some leader. I will report to you once again, just as a fact-finding mission. I'm not trying to embarrass anyone. I'm just covering a story. No one, including the public relations director of the San Francisco 49ers, can tell me what the website is to track the $1 million donation Colin Kaepernick says he's going to make. Remember, he said he was going to donate game checks. It's week 11, so he should now be done with that. Game checks mean you get a game check in your locker after the game. So there should be $1 million circulated right now amongst vetted, responsible Bay Area or even national charities of his choosing. But not a single one has been mentioned to the Niners director of public relations. So is it a leap for me to assume that it doesn't exist yet? How would you not get that out there? How irresponsible would it be to not share that website publicly as often as possible, maybe even wear that as a t-shirt instead of a picture of Malcolm X the next time you're at the podium? CapsKids.com. I mean, I already got the name of your website ready to go.
That's actually really cute.
CapsKids.org. It's a charity. Let's go to Deborah in Alameda. Deborah, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and what you're saying about the Kaepernick situation. It is all true. But what has not been said, and I was very, very disappointed when Guru came on, and while he didn't exactly back Kaepernick, he didn't get into the fact that Kaepernick was wrong. No matter how you look at it, Kaepernick was wrong. Blacks in America have fought for what we take up, for what he's taking for granted. Blacks have died and suffered in order to get this vote, and still are in some places. And he is trying to act like he has done us a favor by not voting, and then the news comes out that he's not even registered. It is a shame that someone with his ability to get into the media is not taking advantage of his what he has.
Look, you cannot hold on. Look, I thank you very much, Deborah. Thank you so much for the call and for listening. Let me leave you with this. You cannot claim to care about being a boat captain, deeply, deeply care about seafaring, if you've never been on a boat. This is the Damon Bruce Show. We just got word from the Golden State Warriors that they're on their way to Toronto, which means we're not going to have Draymond Green on today. He'll be joining us on Thursday. So we'll talk to him about the trip to Toronto, and it'll be good. In between taking on the Raptors and Boston Celtics, it's two of the three best teams in the East right there. They obviously won't play the best team in the East, the Cleveland Cavaliers, until Christmas Day. So this is, as everyone evaluates every single possession of the Golden State Warriors as if it's the final possession of Game 7 of the NBA Finals, there's going to be quite a bit of focus on these next two games. And, you know, look, rightfully so. They're an incredible show. They're incredibly interesting. I'm going to tell you right now that Warriors have played an NBA record 96 regular season games without suffering back-to-back losses. So when you continue to bring up or hear someone continuing to bring up, like, what's wrong with the Warriors? Why aren't they clicking yet? You can tell them that they dished out 30 assists and shot at least 50% from the floor for their fourth straight game. I'd say things are coming together handsomely. I mean, I know when this team was built, they were built to be the best team in early November, right? I mean, that was the goal. Early November victory should carry you through the entire year. What's wrong with the Warriors? They're on pace for 66 wins. What's wrong with the Warriors? They're on pace for 66, 67 victories. Oh, God.
We got so spoiled last year.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, 73, it's like...
It's ridiculous how spoiled people have become. And all I can tell you is that we are so, everybody is so overanalyzing everything that the appreciation of how we used to watch sports is like totally gone. Every single night on Twitter during my childhood, there would have been somebody trying to explain to me why Michael Jordan wasn't as good as what I was seeing. Don't believe your eyes. Here are four mathematical equations to prove to you that Michael Jordan isn't quite the player that Oscar Robertson was yet. Oh, no. God forbid. Just to keep you abreast of everything that's going on, in Carolina, the San Jose Sharks, scoreless first intermission. Donskoy? No. It'd be great if he just went off so I could really enjoy all the fruits of the Jonas Donskoy scar cult of personality that we have pretty much been solely responsible. How Donskoy is not like tithing me a good fifth of his salary right now. I don't know. Is there anybody who talks more about Donskoy than me? Anybody? Mr. and Mrs. Donskoy, maybe? That would be it. Let's go to Laker Raider, who's been waiting way too long, man. Thank you so much. How are you today?
Big Bruce, how you doing, man? Congrats. I hope you got a comfortable couch now that you're married.
Thank you very much. It is quite lovely. Nice and cushioned, well-appointed living room. We're ready to just sit and watch TV and never do anything exciting ever again.
I heard that. Want to chime in real quick about my Raiders, but before I get on that LeBron, I just think it was him being sensitive, and if anybody else said it, I might, think twice, but not the hippie. We could not put racist marks on the hippie. Everybody knows Phil Jackson's a hippie. His whole social stance and outlook of life lets you know he's a hippie. I don't think he meant it like that, but I could see how people, want to jump all over it because he got a little sensitive. But to my Raiders, this is a big game. We need to show we can not just wake up for the big games, but give it to the weak quarterbacks that we've been luckily playing.
Well, and that might be like a saving grace of this. If there were any chance that they were going to overlook Brock Osweiler or the Texans, this game's going to have a playoff Super Bowl feel to it, since they're, you know, they're going to be the only show in town on Monday night. Everybody's going to be watching. It's going to have that international flair. It's going to feel bigger than a normal regular season, even Monday night game would, because it's going to be down in Mexico City. So I think if there were anything that might make the Raiders get a little casual with their game prep, you don't have to worry about that this week.
Yeah, as long as we stick to the plan. You know, the OC, he makes me lose my mind. I seen the offensive lineman Hudson during that Denver game go crazy for calling a pass play after we just got an interception and we've been running it down their throat. That's the only thing that be worrying me sometimes watching this game. Just stick to what we're doing, what's working. If it's no huddle, then stick to it. If it's shoving it down their throat, then stick to it. Sometimes he just seems off, and I haven't seen him call an excellent A game all year. We actually haven't played an A game since Denver. I'm talking about opening.
Right. Well, that was the last game, so that's good. Yeah. The last game you played did get the A grade. Thank you, Laker Raider. I appreciate it. We haven't played well since Denver. Yeah, that was last game. Jameson, San Jose. What's up, Jameson?
How's it going, man?
Doing well.
Okay, I just wanted to call and say that you changed my mind. You opened my eyes up to a little bit of what's really going on with Cap and his viewpoints. I haven't heard anything, and, you know, I look for you for an open mind and stuff, and I appreciate you. You changed my mind on this guy, man. He doesn't deserve much in the way of what he's trying to push, you know, credit for what he's trying to push.
Right. Look, I was suspicious from the get-go. I gave him all the benefit of the doubt. I was impressed by the way he put himself out there. But, you know, here's what happens. When the spotlight falls on you, you better be ready for it, because with the spotlight comes scrutiny. I'm sure Colin Kaepernick, as he was taking that knee down in San Diego preseason week 4, never thought for a second that the Sacramento Bee would be investigating both the state of California and state of Nevada registered voter lists to see how committed to this he really was. He's over his skis. He retweets his girlfriend's timeline. And the fact that he printed some T-shirts and showed up and talked to some kids in Oakland is great. But I don't think this is a guy that should be shaping the young minds and hearts of young children who are looking for a leader. And this guy's unqualified to be a leader on any level of activism if he is not participating in the right to vote.
Good call. And did you say real quick, I'm sorry, when you said Jameson again in San Jose?
No, Jameson, San Jose. Oh, no. Well, Jameson, No. If anything else, it's because I ordered a few too many JMOs at the end of my own wedding.
Hey, congrats, man. Good for you, bro.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mike, the cookie guy. Calling from Oakland. Mike Cookie?
Hey, D-Bruce. I just wanted to see how those cookies went over that dropped off last week.
You weren't here. Mike, they were delicious. He brought these chocolate chip cookies, and they were a take on, I think they had bacon in it, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, he brought them for the station. Thank you for that, Mike. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm looking at it this way. Gianna's palate is as discerning, if not even more so, than mine. So she's giving your cookies a thumb up. I got Albie just looking at me right now, just nodding in agreement to the question that wasn't even asked, were the cookies good? He's telling me right away. I don't have to ask. They were good, man. Elena, cookies, she loved them too. Everyone loved them, man. Thank you very much, Mike.
Awesome. Glad you guys enjoyed them.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone who wants to feed the program, always we always respect that. What can I tell you?
Kind of a different take on a chocolate chip cookie. Had bits of bacon in it. So they were different. Like, they had that salty, sweet vibe. They were good.
I like salty, sweet.
Crunchy.
I like salty, sweet.
Yeah.
So we eschewed the traditional wedding cake at the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And we did an Oreo cake. We did Oreos and milk at the end of the night.
That was very cute.
And we also did popcorn. And now I have, like, a box of kettle corn at home that I swear to God is going to be the death of me.
You can bring that in. The popcorn was really good.
I'm not bringing it in. That's staying home. That is staying home for sure.
It was a good little takeaway. And you had, like, Oreo pops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dipped in chocolate.
Yeah.
White chocolate.
Nothing like an Oreo dipped in chocolate on a lollipop stick.
On a lollipop stick.
White chocolate. White chocolate.
Thank you
they
very much, Arsenio
white
Hall.
Chocolate.
He's right about that. Don't let Colin Kaepernick find out that I dip my Oreos in white chocolate. He'll call me a racism and block me on Twitter again. You're a racism, D. Bruce. I got to go down there and confront him on this after this Patriots game, don't I? Because he'll never come on the show. There's no way. I'm going to have to go to him and do this.
Try to have a chat.
It's on. This is the Damon Bruce Show.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.